followed by our information break and the anniversary celebrations. Our main speaker tonight is Phil.
My name is Phil Nakahal.
Hi, Phil.
I'm a member of the Bedford Village Group. That tells you who I am, what I am, and where I belong. Anniversary night is really special. It's all about gratitude. I read the other day in the Grapevine Court, it said, the more I give to AA, the better my life gets. And that has been my experience. I'm going to tell you, my last drink was March 8th, 1980, so I've been in the program a long time. And the only thing I can tell you that I've done right is I've never taken a vacation from AA. I've been active in AA, and I'm very lucky that way. My wife actually is here tonight. She'll be celebrating 42 years. And she still refers to me as the newcomer. Bronx Irish Catholic, there were six of us, all of us alcoholics. Both my parents, who eventually did find AA, which helped me later on when I hit my bottom. Anyway, there were six of us, and it was a crazy house, it really was. My sister always says, you knew it was Christmas at our house when the cops were at the door. And it's true, it really was. I remember even going out at Christmas Eve with my dad, and he'd be drinking and come home with a treat, which was really cheap before Christmas. And he'd be getting blacked out. And I lived in bars. Growing up, I actually lived in bars. Before I could walk, I was in sawdust in the bars. So I was very comfortable in that. It really was. Growing up, I guess, most active. And the fact that was, when I was 7 miles and running, every Memorial Day, I broke my arm. I left on 3 times. And it was pretty much on my own, as far back as I can remember. You know, playing in the playground and stuff. I didn't have a lot of friends. I was kind of troubled in the respect that I got into a lot of fights. I just couldn't get along with people. And, I do remember that my first resentment was kindergarten. My mom left me off at school, and she laughed, and I cried. And a kid named Henry made fun of me. I pushed Henry down the stairs. The next year, I beat up Henry on principle. That's how I started out my life in the Irish family of the Kellys. Anyway, when did I have my first drink? I do remember my first drink. It was at my grandmother's house, and it was in a stem glass, and it was Anisette. And I drank it. It tasted like licorice. It was a big gum candy. It warmed my stomach, and man, it tasted good. And I wanted more, and they wouldn't give me more. And I had a candy. And that's really the story of my drinking. It really is. If I didn't get my own way, I had to have a tap. So anyway, I was into sports early. Eventually, we moved up to New Rochelle. My parents used to go back and forth to New Rochelle, and we just stopped at a bar, and then we moved on top of it. And that's how it was. So it was convenient, put it that way. But New Rochelle was a great place to grow up. It had great sports programs, and I got into all kinds of sports, basketball, football, track, boxing, you name it. I never lived at home. I was there to sleep and eat, and then I was out. I was either at the boys' club, at the gym, someplace. I never was at home. And then I started, I guess, my first drinking, I guess, was, you know, guys with beer in the park and stuff, and then we graduated to the bowling alley. You know, slow gin fizzes, daiquiris, those kind of drinks, actually. And I remember my first bar drink was 25 cent beers. And $3 with a buyback, you could get a pretty good buzz. And so that's how I started my drinking. And I felt that that's what was a big mature man, being an adult was. So I started drinking that way, and I got in trouble really early on. I had blackouts earlier. Probably when I was 13 or 14, I had my first blackout. And I had blackouts all through high school, actually. And I actually stopped playing certain sports because I wanted to work to be able to afford to drink. So I just concentrated on one sport, and I did pretty well in that. I was captain of the football team, but I was always a loner. I was really always a daydreamer. I had a lot of different sets of friends, but that's how I lived my life. I was just aloof, pretty much. And it was really, I think, is because I was so fearful. If I look at my drinking, I drank out of fear. My fourth step was really, I was afraid, period. Really was. And anyway, I went on with my drinking that way and had blackouts, got into some trouble, got into car accidents. One time I went out before Christmas and I came to and I woke up, I was really, really hungover. You know, in the beginning, you know that there's something wrong with drinking when your bed is spinning, you're sweating, you're palpitating the heart, you're getting really sick, and yet you do it the next week. It's crazy. But I always thought, practice. And that's what I did, I practiced. Anyway, I finally graduated from high school, and I was lucky enough to get a football scholarship in Colorado. A small school with 7,800 feet above sea level. The first time I drank there, I drank some Coke 45, and I got wiped out. Anyway, I went along my road that way, played football. I met a girl from Alaska, and I got an opportunity to work up in Alaska in construction in the summertime. So I went out there and I ended up getting married. And I didn't really want to get married. But she was a great girl, and the money was phenomenal, my dad was great. I'll just tell you one little incident in Alaska. These guys drank, we worked at us on a dam, and you had to fly in. And these guys were all divorced, all in their 40s and 50s, 300 men, and they all drank, and they drank unbelievable shots and beers, the whole nine yards. And one time I came into town, and I called up my girlfriend at the time, and said, I'll be home, and just stopping and having a few drinks. Well, 2 days later, I came back, and I woke up in a strange place, had no idea how I got there, and her dad, who's the guy that got me this job, tried to stop me on beer and my drinking, and I really must have been very unpleasant to him. And he said to me, he said, you know, you're a nice enough fellow, Phil. And not only in retrospect do I see this in AA, you're a nice enough fellow, Phil, but you're a person that shouldn't drink. And I was so offended. That's my right to drink. So I got married, and I worked 3 summers up in Alaska, refunding money, and I worked one winter up there, and I came back. She was a year behind me. And she took in strays. Like, she took in stray cats. She took in me. And I was out all the time. Like, bars were just a magnet to me. I remember even leaving a Halloween party. We had a Halloween party. I was in a ball costume. And I just wanted to get out to the bar. So I went to this bar called the Alamo. And I was in my dog costume. And it was a place that you don't go into with a dog costume. But that's what I needed to do. So at one point she said to me, she said, you know, Phil, I don't love you, I don't hate you, but you've drained every emotion from me. And that's what alcoholics do. They drain every emotion out of you. And I said to myself, how could she do such a nice, you know, I'm such a nice guy. But I wasn't. I was very self-centered, and I did what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. I came back to New York and met a buddy who played with William and Mary, and we said, let's go out west. We were in a bar, hammered, and we ended up in Florida. I haven't drunk since I'm Florida. far to be in the bomb. And that's what I was for a couple of years down there. I had 15 minutes. So anyway, I went down Florida. I'll tell you one story that was really embarrassing and really sums up my drinking. I wanted to be a lifeguard down there, Broward County, and they had really great benefits and stuff. I got hammered the night before. I mean hammered. I was afraid to go to sleep because I knew I was going to wake up in time. So I showed up to the lifeguard task, and I did a little grinding on the beach and sweat stuff coming out of me. Then I had to swim out to a buoy, and I started to get cramps. I started getting the dry heaves. I was going to drown. And I was going to say, help, doctor. That's a typical alcoholic. The utter inability to ask for help. That was my life. I could not ask for help. So anyway, I did meet a girl down there who became my second wife. And we went to Reno, Nevada. And another geographic. I took a lot of trips. I was always trying to change the outside. And as we all know, alcoholism is an inside job. And that's where the change takes place. And that's what AA is. It's changed me from the inside out. And I'm so grateful to AA that I got this second opportunity. So anyway, I was out there with my second wife, and we finally came back to New York. And my drinking really picked up at the time. And I was working with the city for the Health and Household Corporation. You couldn't get fired from Health and Household. That was impossible. And I used to drink all the time. And one time I came home, and I knew the marriage was getting a little rocky when all the furniture was gone. It was gone. And so, you know what I said? A buddy of mine, I said, this calls for a drink. And she left the bed, and she left the table, the black and white TV. And I lived like that for 2 years. Mm-hmm. On my 30th birthday, I was in the city, and I was drinking. I was actually seeing a psychiatrist at the time because I had gotten arrested twice in the same night for a fight in the car. Don't ask me about it. But my brother said, boy, you need help. And he was in really bad shape. And so anyway, I went and a new buddy from Florida, actually. I missed my train back to White Plains. And I got sick on the way over to his house. And I showed up at his house. He said, what happened to you? I said, what do you mean? He said, you're missing your front tooth. I said, I'm missing my front tooth. I'll be right back. I went back and got the garment, picked it up. Oh, my God. I'm very happy. That's the true story. So anyway, I had the car accidents. I got the flights. And I ended up, you know, all that stuff. I got a DWI, bad luck. All that stuff really was not what brought me into AA. What brought me into AA was isolation. At the end of my drinking, I didn't want to drink anymore. I got in a strange bar, all by myself, isolated, pretty much done. And so I felt like such a loser. By the time I was 32 years old, I felt like 92. And I was lucky. My dad got sober in AA. And his power of example, I never thought this guy would get sober. And his power of example, I knew was in a bad place. I played cards with some of the guys that he got sober with. And I knew it was in a bad place. And so I came to AA and I did what I was told. I just didn't drink and went to meetings. I went to 2 meetings a day for the first 5 years at least. I got a sponsor group. I got active in that group. And I went through the steps with the sponsor. And what happened is I had a spiritual awakening. And what does that mean, a spiritual awakening? When you read the promises, that's what a spiritual awakening is. A whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. And it has changed. I've had rough things happen to me in sobriety. I lost a brother and sister to this disease, 24 and 42 years of age. The amazing thing is, I never even thought it was a chance. And the AA army was there to support me like that. It's amazing. So my life has gotten so much, but I can't tell you about the friends, the family. I'm expecting my fourth grandchild, granddaughter right now. I had a great business for 25 years. I'm semi-retired. My wife wants me to work. I go to Nantucket. But my life has gotten so good. And it's the energy in this room, the welcoming of this group, the seeing all these people, any age of life and around. And it's all because one drunk is trying to help another drunk, pretty much. So how much time do I have? I'm worried about time. Yeah. So I went through it pretty quick. But that's pretty much my story. But I will talk a little bit about recovery. And I think that's probably the most important thing. I think I was taught early on that sponsorship is really the key to stay hooked in AA. An old timer once told me, look at guys that are 2 years sober. And if they're not sponsored, they'll trip away. And I believe that's true. And we're all so much alike. I get so much out of trying to help another alcoholic, whether I'm successful or not. And I've sponsored a lot of people over the years. And I think that to do a fifth step with somebody is so almost sacrosanct, really, because you're trusting in that other individual. I think the hardest part of for me, when I was going through the steps, was 6 and 7. I probably was closer to turning at that point when I survived another time, because it wasn't changing. I was the same guy, I just didn't have that can of beer in my hand. And that was the difference. And so I think, it's all about acceptance and surrender to me. And for me, that's what I did. In the 6 and 7 steps, I got to a point that I was so uncomfortable in my own skin, I was either going to drink or surrender. I had called on my sponsor, and he said, just keep going the way you're going. You're going to end up in the gutter. And he hung up the phone. He did. I think his heart defects were working. I actually called him a couple of weeks ago just to say hello to him. He's down in Williamsburg, Virginia. And I had to thank him because He was tough, but he was very, very compassionate. And I really think kindness is the difference that really made all the difference in my life in AA. We're used to criticism, we're used to fighting and stuff, but it was the kindness of the people in AA that really changed me. We all talk about a spiritual awakening, having a personal God in our life. Maybe that's the most important thing I've learned in AA. No matter what happens, I can always turn to God for help. And I do that every day. I ask God's help every single day. Prayer started out as a discipline for me because I was so undisciplined. And so now I do it every day. My wife is a tremendous power example for me spiritually. She really is. I mean, she really took a chance on me. Third time, you got to think twice. So that was all part of it, too. But AA just changed my whole world. It really has. I mean, I can't even explain the fellowship. I was talking to Rich's dad. I want to thank Rich for asking me. And I want to say thank you to all the celebrants that are going to be coming up here tonight. Because it's so special to celebrate an anniversary. Especially that first year where you go through everything. It's all about not drinking. Second year, you wake up and life happens. And really a whole other thing in second year. Terrible Tuesday call. But anyway, so for me, AA's given me a life. I hate to use the beyond my wildest dreams. When I was drinking, I didn't have any dreams. I really didn't. I just drank every day. And I was ossified. At the end of my drinking, there wasn't a waking moment that I wasn't high. From the time I got on the train to the time I got home and passed out, pretty much. I know you're not talking about drugs and stuff, but I once tried to quit drinking by smoking pot. And it didn't work. You got me so paranoid, I had nothing to steal. I thought someone was going to rob me. And I had 5 minutes, thank God. I'm just so thankful. I can't explain it. I live in Bedford Hills, which is a stone throw away from Bill Wilson's house. I look over the same woods he looks over, as Phil sees it. That's what my wife is going to ask. But it's really remarkable. You know, I think that Dr. Barr, you know, he kept it so simple. Trust God, mean house, help others. That's really the formula. It's a winning success. That's what success is. Really just being with yourself, being authentic. I think that's the thing about AA. When you see people, they're authentic. They're not putting on any airs, they are who they are. And as my friend always says, we all have comeback stories in here. And my comeback story is full of gratitude tonight. To be able to be speaking here tonight, to be with my wife, looking forward to seeing my new grandchild being born this week, hopefully, and living a good life. So I'm going to leave early.